In today's episode, as Theresa May's Brexit deal brings cabinet resignations and challenges to her leadership, I'm in Westminster for a day of chaos. Plus, in her own words and exclusive, how Michelle Obama met her husband, Barack. Yesterday was a monumental day for Brexit. May had presented her deal on Wednesday, and then the resignation started. Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab.
The Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab has resigned. This is seismic news for Theresa May.
Work and Pension Secretary Esther McVeigh.
Esther McVeigh goes, and maybe no surprise because she was thought to be one of those who was most argumentative, most unhappy with the PM at the Cabinet yesterday.
And then four junior ministers. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, behind the scenes on a day of chaos in Westminster.
And I feel sorry for her this morning, let down by the disloyalty of so many of her colleagues. And I also feel sorry for her because we have actually given her an impossible...
I think a lot of people feel quite sorry for Theresa May, yes. Because, you know what, it's really hard to get through Brexit. I was just talking to a civil servant who's been really involved in this, and I was like, what's the master plan? Surely there's a master plan. And they were like, no, this is the master plan. And I went, what do you mean? What is the master plan? And they said, well, funnily enough, people warned that negotiating Brexit was going to be hard, and here we are. Shit has hit the fan. Are we allowed to swear on a podcast?
Yeah, well, you've done it now, so yeah.
Well, I rushed across London with our producer, Rachel Humphreys, to the Houses of Parliament.
Okay, it's just coming up for 12 o'clock midday, and we're hurtling through the streets of central London down to Westminster. Theresa May's on her feet. She's getting attacked on all sides by ministers right at this moment. Anushka, you've been covering this for a long time. What's going through your mind right now?
And this feels like it could be a collapse of government. I mean, how long is she going to last? And if she does get through this, which looks very, very difficult, what then? I mean, how can Theresa May continue? Her majority is completely shattered. I mean, I'm obsessively on Twitter this morning. You can see at the moment, she's just stood up in Parliament, and Jacob Rees-Mogg, who's one of her own backbenchers, has basically said to her face, I'm going to send in a letter that's going to call for your resignation.
As what my right honourable friend says, and what my right honourable friend does no longer match, should I not write to my right honourable friend, the member for Altrincham and Sale West?
Prime Minister.
I mean, it's a spectacle. We've even got Labour MPs standing up and saying, oh, you're so courageous. You're so courageous for doing this. But come on, let's have a people's vote. And do you know what? On Brexit, for the first time, people are saying this could not happen now. It really is massive stakes because essentially, Theresa May's put forward a deal, and this is as good as she's going to get, or that's what she's saying. It's not good enough for her Brexiteers. They are absolutely spitting. And as we know, cabinet members are resigning. And it's obviously not good enough for all the MPs who want to remain in the EU. And they're being very, very open about that. For once now, it feels like we could either be crashing out without a deal, or we could be remaining in the EU. So it's midday, we've just got to Portcullis House, which is where MPs and researchers and journalists gather in Parliament, and we're going to go and find parliamentary reporter for The Guardian, Dan Sabber. We've tracked down Dan Sabber. You've just been in the chamber of the House of Commons watching the Prime Minister take very difficult questions from behind her. You came out of there and I think you went to the huddle. And I just had a text actually, Dan, which I'm sure you had too, which was from a very senior Brexiteer that said there is an ERG, European Research Group, that's the group of Tory Brexiteers meeting in Committee Room 10 at 12:45. That's in about 15 minutes. So presumably as soon as we're talking, you're going to leg it over to there.
We certainly will. That reason that meeting's so interesting is, are they going to finally sit down and put their anger on a piece of paper, and are they going to write these, are they going to sit down and all collectively write these letters demanding that a vote of confidence be held in Theresa May? You need, as is very well known in Westminster, you need 48 Tory MPs, 15% of the parliamentary party, to sign letters demanding that a confidence vote be held. If Graham Brady, who's the chairman of the 1922 committee, receives those 48 letters, he must tell the Prime Minister and must organise a confidence vote within a day or two. And the PM's got to win half plus one to keep going. I think it's 159 from memory. Now, something very interesting happened here just now, no more than 5 minutes ago, which is that Graham Brady, who's a very amiable fellow, well-known to journalists, and very friendly and quite happy to explain, was just wandering through Portcullis House, and he doesn't have 48 letters. No one knows how many he's got, but he definitely doesn't have 48 right now.
You need to run. Go. That'll get good great. Stuff. We'll catch up with you later, Dan.
Yeah.
So we've come outside the Houses of Parliament and we're rushing down the road because we've heard that Jacob Rees-Mogg is going to give a statement. The thing that he's so angry about is the 585-page Brexit withdrawal agreement. Some of it is uncontentious. We knew there was going to be a £39 billion divorce bill. We knew that there was going to be a long section on citizen rights. All the fuss is about the so-called Irish backstop. That is how to keep a soft Irish border if it isn't negotiated in a future trade deal. And the reason that it's got people like Jacob Rees-Mogg so angry is that he thinks it means staying in a customs union forever. And that, he says, is not Brexit.
Anishka, is this one of those moments where the moment is bigger on Twitter than it is when you're actually here?
Well, just to say, I'm like literally 20 yards from where Jacob Rees-Mogg is speaking, but there's this massive sea of largely men in front of us with cameras, and someone's drilling in the road. You can hardly hear him, but I'm following it on Twitter. I'm literally following it on Twitter from 20 yards away. Look, there's a picture from behind. And it's basically Jacob Rees-Mogg launching a leadership contest against the Prime Minister.
I'm not offering my name as leader. This is nothing to do. This is nothing to do with me. This is about not having confidence in the current leader and believing that the deal simply does not work.
Here's Jacob Rees-Mogg coming up. How do you feel today, Jacob?
How do I feel?
Feel. That's the word I'm looking for.
It's not a matter of feel, is it really? It's about details of policy and politics.
You must feel something. It must feel hard feel to do that.
We have got to
the Prime Minister.
Well, you've got to do what has to be done. That I campaigned on Brexit. I stood on a manifesto promising Brexit. The Prime Minister is not doing that. The conclusion just follows.
Not a done deal! Put the nation before your party! Nation comes first! Stop Brexit! Stop Brexit!
So it's just gone to, we've come from Portcullis House, where it's really weird. Of course, it's a massive day, but inside Parliament, sometimes things seem pretty normal. And then you come outside, and right now I'm looking at it, and there are what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 white tents. It's absolutely swarming with people. There are journalists, politicians, there are big shining lights. You can see some of the names of some of the organisations. LBC's there, I'm sure the BBC's there, Sky's there. Everyone's getting interviewed here. Look, where are these guys from? She's trying to ask. Excuse me, can we ask where you're from? No, it's fine.
I'm sorry, we were just making fun. No, we're German television.
German television?
Yes.
And so this is quite a big, we're from The Guardian.
Hello.
Can we just ask you, this is quite a big deal then for people. You see, it's a big day. Do you think Theresa May's going to fall?
We don't know. I mean, we have no idea the way they're working. We don't know what's in the mind of the ERG. I mean, if they're mounting a leadership challenge at this point in time, they must mean it. I mean, they must want something.
What do people in Germany think?
People in Germany, I mean, they're not really generally that interested in Brexit because it's, I think it's a disturbance. I mean, it needs to be solved. Let's have a solution. Let's have some sort of contract and get it out of the way. But this sort of symbolic experience here, and this is like a circus. It's theater. It's political theater. And people are just, they can't believe their eyes, because how is it possible that a country, for no reason whatsoever, descends into this sort of mayhem?
It's interesting to hear a German journalist give their perspective of this. It's obviously looking quite chaotic, and I kind of wonder what it feels like in Brussels, and I think I'm going to give Daniel Boffey, who's the Guardian's Brussels bureau chief, a call.
Hello.
Hey, answered. How you doing?
I've got a horrible cold. Does it sound very nasal? Does it sound very snotty?
You're reasonably snotty. And what does it all look like from there?
Dismay is the essence of it. 2 years of hard work under extreme pressure, with London changing its position every couple of weeks.
And Daniel, it feels really, really chaotic here in Westminster. What does it feel like in Brussels?
It feels, there's a certain amount of calm. They're just sort of carrying on what they were going to do, which is trying to explain the process. So we've had officials explaining what's going on, and they've published documents, and they are going through their own internal process, you know, blithely trying to ignore what's going on in Westminster, which is kind of, actually, it's been quite a lot of the time is what they've had to do. Ignore what's going on in Westminster and do their own thing, because they can't control what's happening in Westminster.
Thank you, you're a star.
All right.
Bye.
Jesus Christ, the Son of the Living God.
I don't know what he thinks of Brexit.
Jesus. Why is there such chaos and confusion in the political arena? Every political party is anti-Christ. Conservative, Labour, Liberal, Green Party. They're all anti-Christ.
It is 3 o'clock, right, walking down the road. We've just bumped into Anna Soubry, who is about as passionately Remain as they come.
I think
I
am. Yes, absolutely, actually. I have. I was absolutely willing to give it a go on the basis it was the single market, the customs union.
Isn't
I accepted
that sort
we were
of what
leaving.
Offering?
What, this?
Oh, look, she's actually holding the document.
Point at the
600 pages
withdrawal agreement.
And have you read it all?
No, but I can tell you which bit I've absolutely read.
You've read the summary on The Guardian?
No, obviously, it goes without saying. Article 174, Rees-Mogg, I have to say, is right. It does indeed hand over sovereignty to the European Court of Justice. Now, I personally don't have a problem with the European Court of Justice, but lots and lots of people who voted for us to leave the European Union on the basis that we would be out of the European Court of Justice and all these other things now discover, actually, we are more entwined with the European Union, but for even fewer of the considerable benefits that we used to enjoy.
And what does
this is madness
today feel like in there?
This is not good. It's embarrassing. I'm a member of the Conservative Party. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed by fellow Conservative MPs for their disgraceful behaviour. I'm embarrassed at colleagues who sit round a table, agree on something, allow the Prime Minister to go out and say we've reached an agreement, and then resign almost on the hour for maximum publicity. Cleverly coordinated, absolutely treacherous, awful and unacceptable. God knows what the rest of the world must be thinking. I'm embarrassed and I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of my party.
What would you vote if there was a confidence vote? Well, when there's a confidence vote?
Oh, I don't think we need a change in leadership. I think this is complete madness. I mean, God knows what ordinary people are thinking. I voted for Theresa May, and yes, I accept that I have found her very disappointing. But the point is, you have to be grown up, responsible, put the nation's interests first.
Live from Westminster, where Theresa May stands defiance by cabinet resignations.
How does today feel?
Well, this deal is dead in the water. It's not going anywhere. Parliament won't countenance no deal, so we're heading for a people's vote. We're going to get another referendum.
Definite.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no other alternative for the country. And I think we're heading for a people's vote, and I think there'll be a resounding majority to stick with the deal we've currently got.
How does it feel in Parliament? What's the mood?
Well, it feels as if the Conservative Party are having another of their periodic nervous breakdowns. The idea that replacing Theresa May with anyone else is going to make the blindest bit of difference is for the birds, because it doesn't change the parliamentary arithmetic. There has never been a majority in the Commons for a hard Brexit. There's certainly no majority for us crashing out without a deal. So I'm afraid the poor public are going to have to give another verdict on this and vote in another referendum.
One of the most striking things that I've noticed today, and I've been covering this for ages, is just how emboldened the people who want another referendum are. I mean, it has just changed so dramatically. We heard from Ben Bradshaw just now, absolutely convinced now that we're going to get a people's vote. I mean, there has been a massive shift in mood. The problem with having another referendum is it would just be massively divisive again. And what I don't know is how these people think that they would cope with that. Because 17.4 million people did vote for Brexit. Lots of buzz since we heard from Downing Street that Theresa May was having a press conference. Lots of gossip going around. Could she be about to quit? Someone's even just WhatsApped me that. I don't think so, but let's see.
Leadership is about taking the right decisions, not the easy ones. I believe that this is a deal which does deliver, which is in the national interest. And am I going to see this through? Yes. Next question. Yes.
So the Prime Minister has just finished her press conference and we are just walking through the corridors to the Guardian's office in Parliament to find Dan Sather.
I think it might be a day for swearing.
There was a ripple at the beginning where you suddenly thought, you know, she might actually, this might be the moment where she might sort of call time on a premiership, that she started to talk about it in such personalised terms. And then suddenly you realise quite quickly, no, it was going to be yet another sort of, you know, hold the line, yet another nothing has changed press conference, this extraordinary calm persona, this, you know, this ability after she's had what on any measure is the most terrible day where people are resigning around her, expressing no confidence in her, you know, policy, demanding that she, you know, be fired from her job, a change of leader and all that. And then she just comes out and, you know, projects this aura of, you know, slightly boring, but sort of calmness and sort of just works her way through the questions. You think, how does she do it?
And it is a real contrast, isn't it? Because it was sort of chaotic everywhere else that we were today in Westminster. I mean, what's the truth? Theresa May's calm or the chaos on the green?
Well, yeah, both can be true. I mean, May clearly, it's not an act. You know, she has got this ability to project this incredibly calm persona in public. She'd obviously had that sort of pre-cooked line. You know, am I going to see this through? Yes. You know, the thing about Theresa May when you watch her for a while is she repeats herself, passing ad nauseam. Sometimes when she's under pressure, mangles her words a bit more. But usually there's one thing that she says that's new, and you kind of perk up and go, ah, that's the thing they want to get across.
And just quickly, we can hear the rest of the office behind you. I can see the whole Guardian team, Heather typing furiously. Presumably that is tomorrow's splash. Where, you know, you've been a news editor for a number of years. How do you bring this story to an end tonight?
Well, I think, look, Theresa May's words will carry things through for a lot of people, particularly for the papers that want to support her. You know, papers like the Mail's now incredibly supportive, and the Express and so on. But the fact remains that, you know, you're always going to be, you know, starting your story or leading a paper, indeed, you know, on the last good thing that happened, or the last sort of strong and clear cut thing that happened. And May's language is clearly part of that. But you've also got a day of absolute turmoil that you have to reflect. You know, two cabinet members resigning, a string of, you know, junior members resigning, this sort of, you know, extraordinary high profile challenge to her authority with Jacob Rees-Mogg marching through the Commons and marching out onto St Stephen's, and that's, you know, you've got to capture some of that. But finally, and the great great uncertainty or the thing that we're all thinking about is, what about Michael Gove? What about Penny Morton? You know, Morton's a minister on the brink, doesn't look like she's going tonight, we'll see. You know, what's Michael Gove up to? Is he going to be Brexit secretary with extra magic powers to kind of sort out the problem, or a sort of wide-ranging brief, or is he going to be promoted in some way to support her, or is it, you know, is the fact that they've all gone to ground actually another clever bit of spin from the Gove camp to make him seem more important than he actually is?
Dan, thank you very much. Heather, good luck with that splash.
Thank you.
where you can follow all our live coverage of Brexit and the drama in Westminster on our Politics Live blog at theguardian.com. After the break, Michelle Obama on how she first met the man who would go on to be America's 44th president. Welcome back. Now, in an exclusive extract from Becoming, a new memoir from Michelle Obama, the former First Lady reveals how she first met a young lawyer named Barack.
I looked at my watch. Any sign of this guy? I called to Lorraine. Her sigh was audible. Girl, no, she called back. She was amused, I could tell. She knew how tardiness drove me nuts, how I saw it as nothing but hubris. Barack Obama had already created a stir at the firm. For one thing, he'd just finished his first year of law school, and normally we only hired second-year students for summer positions. But rumor had it, he was exceptional. Word had spread that one of his professors at Harvard, the daughter of a managing partner, claimed he was the most gifted law student she'd ever encountered. Some of the secretaries who'd seen the guy come in for his interview were saying that on top of his apparent brilliance, he was also cute. Yeah. I was skeptical of all of it. In my experience, you put a suit on any half-intelligent black man and white people tended to go bonkers. I was doubtful he'd earned the hype. I checked out his photo in the summer edition of our staff directory. A less than flattering, poorly lit headshot of a guy with a big smile and a whiff of geekiness, and remained unmoved. His bio said he was originally from Hawaii, which at least made him a comparatively exotic geek. Otherwise, nothing stood out. The only surprise had come weeks earlier when I made a quick obligatory phone call to introduce myself. I'd been pleasantly startled by the voice on the other end of the line, a rich, even sexy baritone that didn't seem to match his photo one bit. Until recently, I was the First Lady of the United States of America, a job that's not officially a job, but that nonetheless has given me a platform like nothing I could have imagined. It challenged me and humbled me, lifted me up and shrank me down, sometimes all at once. I'm just beginning to process what took place over these last years. From the moment in 2006, when my husband first started talking about running for president, to the cold morning this winter when I climbed into a limo with Melania Trump, accompanying her to her husband's inauguration. It's been quite a ride.
And you can read the first ever UK interview with Michelle Obama in The Guardian's Weekend magazine this Saturday and online at theguardian.com. That's it for today. Special thanks to Dan Sabat and Daniel Boffey. The producers were Rachel Humphreys, Elizabeth Cassin, Joshua Kelly and Mitha Lee Rao. The executives were Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier. See you on Monday.